Hello and welcome to this episode of The Herb Doctor with Dr. Dailish Clare and myself, Katrina Hegarty. How are you, Dailish? How are you doing?
Well, we're going to discuss a very difficult subject today, which is about grief. And we're both doing it at a time when grief is personally affecting our lives in a big way. So it feels very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't quite know what's going to emerge, but we hope it'll be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start with hopefully, you know, something which is very helpful, which is I've recently been part of the journey of my brother-in-law passing from this life. And this is the bottle of herbs that I took with me over to London. It had St. John's wort, chamomile, hawthorn, rose,
mm-hmm.
motherwort, chocolate, tincture, and lemon balm.
Okay.
I can think of another 30 herbs that could be useful. And I found this very useful while I was going through this with them. So I'd like to share with you that whether we ourselves are dying or we are witnessing death or we experience the loss of a loved one, that herbs are nature's bounty for soothing all of the metabolism of grief. And these are very real. We're in the realm of emotional, spiritual, and physiological experience that we all have are unique in the space that we occupy in this world. These are unique to us. They have our unique experience and how we have processed all of our previous experiences and how we anticipate life after this loss. I'm in the situation of having and kind of inspired, if you like, by all the people that I have lost because I've experienced multiple losses over the last 3 to 4 years of very wonderful people. And that's against a background of losing my mother to death when I was a very small child, 2-year-old. So you could say that all my life.
Take your time.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So I think that comes to one of the points about halfway through what we were talking about, Katrina, which is that loss is permanent.
It sure is, yeah.
But grief is a process. And when we experience other losses, they trigger all the ones before. So now I'm going to do what I advise my patients to do, which is I'm going to take a long breath out. Okay. So we're going to go on to what's the metabolism of grief, and that's a lot less emotional. So it involves the hormone system, the immune system, the cardiovascular system, and brain neurotransmitter metabolisms. So primarily what grief brings us into is a state where cortisol becomes more dominant, and that is associated with a higher blood pressure, increased heart rate, palpitations, our brain function just becomes very discombobulated. Time and space seem to have a different existential kind of experience of these dimensions of our lives. A perception of pain is very different. Sometimes we become more numb, sometimes become hyper aware of pain. And anxiety and depression, and I think especially if they've already been primed, and this is where I think the multiple griefs can just play one off another. The gut flora is affected because the interaction with all of the hormone profile and anything that affects the microbiome has a feedback to the neurotransmitters in the brain. So the body goes into this existential threat to our own existence and questioning of our own existence by adapting with all of these changes. The problem happens when these adaptive changes become more permanent, or that we are very, very vulnerable for our own health. especially during the year after the studies that have been done on when a partner dies. This really is a considerable health hazard. This is a way of underpinning that it is so important to take care of grief. It is so important to allow the process to happen. And this is where I do the other big giveaway, which is how to do that. What are the processes that help us to do that? And I would say that they are reflection, prayer, meditation, whichever is right for your own kind of awareness and being able to have time for letting the important things settle in the mind and give us a sense of continuity with the universe, if you like. That can be helped by journaling. Nobody knows why journaling is helpful. It's not something I can do. I don't know why, because I love books, reading and writing. I did do it for a period in my 30s and found it very helpful, but maybe it's time to go back and do it now, actually, because it's definitely an evidence. These are all evidence-based for those that are impressed by those words, and including me, okay? Exercise, all different kinds of exercise, but I would avoid an ultra marathon, you know, or a very severe triathlon. I think it's a time for gentle exercise like walking, swimming, qigong, tai chi, yoga. My life has been transformed by yoga over the last few years. So yoga is very, very good, especially if it includes a meditative aspect. The one that always makes people laugh is to stroke a pet. You know, immediately we imagine our favorite cats and dogs. The only thing is that goldfish don't like it. So look, go stroking your goldfish. Good food, can't emphasize enough. You know, there is a time for comfort eating, but don't neglect the good food aspect as well. And this is part of the whole social thing where people feed you, and actually you can ask people to support you with this, to do the shopping or to make a meal or whatever. And that brings us on to community, isolating ourselves. Again, there's a level of reflection and meditation, which is healthy, but then that can go to withdrawn, isolated grief, which is not very helpful. And that's unique for everybody, right? But if people are saying they're worried about you, I think that's something to pay attention to, because often we can't make these judgments for ourselves. Then having physical therapies like massage and reflexology. Again, sometimes there's a time where you do want to withdraw and not to have an interaction with another person in that way. And then there's a time to move beyond that and reach out for that kind of help. If the grief is so intense that your life falls apart, or it is so prolonged, generally as a medic, I would say that would generally be described as beyond 2 years. But if you're still in deep grief after 1 year, it's very individual, then do seek advice and help. I'm not an expert on grief, and neither is Katrina. But we do have our life experiences. And I think the reason why we're talking today is because, partly we looked up the effect of grief on people's health, and we were shocked. There's a JAMA article written in 2014. It's based on a database which is recorded information. It's a cohort study. It involves a very large group of people. But it says that for the over 60s, there is twice the risk of a stroke or myocardial infarct, a heart attack, within 30 days of a partner dying. The partner of the person who died does not die, but they can have a health incident relating to these things. I have to say, I was shocked by that. It doesn't match with my clinical experience, so I don't know whether it was a well-done study. I got the original article up, but certainly the incidence of health events and even deaths in the first year in mortality. So we are talking about a very serious health concern that involves taking care of our emotional, spiritual and physical manifestations of grief. That I don't think is being voiced in a way that doesn't frighten people. We experienced fear when we read those statistics.
Yeah.
And this is one of the problems with medical information. A lot of it is fear-based and without solutions that are not also drastic. Okay, so if you go, grief is a normal reaction, but if you go to the doctor, you're likely to be prescribed antidepressants or anti-anxieties medication. The anti-anxiety medication is addictive. So are some of the antidepressants. Or some people are also subject to quite nasty withdrawal symptoms from antidepressants. So they have significant downsides, whereas the herbs don't have those downsides. All right. In 25 years of using herbs, I have never known anybody be addicted, and I have never known anybody suffer from withdrawal. And that's given for depression, and I would also say anxiety, but the evidence-based medicine, because the studies haven't been done, is not there. But my clinical experience is that St. John's wort is useful for both depression and anxiety. And grief is depression from exhaustion of the grief process. That's how I would kind of characterize most of the patients that I've seen over the years. You know that feeling when you leave a hospital and you've left somebody die, and you go out to the front of the hospital and you look outside and the sun is shining and the rest of the world is carrying on as though nothing has happened, and your internal relationship to the whole world and what's usual and ordinary and normal has changed 360 degrees. That's what the physiology is reflecting. That actually changes all of our internal environment as well. The ways that I've described, and the herbs, and often the two in conjunction with each other, have a huge amount to play in reducing this mortality rate. That's big.
It's unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The nuances of dying, I have found, are not that often. Like the difference between somebody dying suddenly and somebody who has had time to share their emotional, a kind of emotional, not things that need to be resolved, because it's often about sharing good memories. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about this, because you were talking about it regarding your mum, if you're comfortable.
Yeah, sure. For me, when it comes to my mum, I felt, for me personally, that it was important to address a lot of difficult issues with her over the years. I done it through maybe over a 20-year period, like I said to you. We talked about difficult things. Maybe my mum's memory wasn't as strong as it used to be, and she mightn't have remembered those situations, but I do. And I felt it was really important for me to address this with her and bring it up with her. And I'm glad I did, because I feel that since she's passed, I feel a wave of peace over me that is very comforting in a way to me personally. And I feel it's kind of, my grief is there, but it's a different feeling of grief that I'm going through, because I know that whatever I said to Mammy over the 20-year period, that I have no regrets. And I know everybody's journey is different, and this is just mine, you know, and I'm very at peace. And that's the way I feel about it, you know, especially with my mum's passing, you know.
Yeah. And when I asked Katrina, you know, because we obviously had a chat before we recorded this, how she was with her mum's passing, she said at peace. And when you read the statistics, or you read about the medicalization, I suppose, of death, and it's being lost to everyday conversations, I don't think peace would be the first thing that people would think of, and yet it was your first reaction.
Yeah.
Some of the deaths I feel at peace with in my life, the one I'm least at peace with is, I suppose, my sister, who died after an adult lifetime of much mental health
angst, for which she was prescribed vast amounts of psychotherapy, psychoactive drugs, which actually caused liver failure. And she died of liver failure. And very difficult ways of dying are respiratory distress and liver failure. So many of those drugs were necessary, but it was the continuity and the increase and the lack of coordinated care. You know, the hospital doctors were very nice, very kind, but they changed on a regular basis on a 2-year rotation. And many of them would just leave things as they were. You know, she was still standing, she was functioning, so they just left things as they were. And if she deteriorated, they would increase them, you know. So that's the one I'm least at peace with. Obviously, my mother's death, that's been being processed through all of my life experiences. And my stepmother's death was very much like your mother. I had said what needed to be said over the years, and we had time to discuss anything else before she died, which was over a year ago. And it's a big loss, because the loss is there and the processing is there. Because I can also talk a bit in this about my kind of general experience with, as a clinician looking after people over the years. I've never experienced some of these circumstances, but they're just general points. If young people die, it is just such a feeling of, this feels wrong. This is a tragedy. You know, the older and older and older we get, the less our death is a tragedy, until eventually people are saying, oh, are they still alive? Once we get into our 90s, we're celebrated for our survival skills. But when we're young, we've not used our potential. You know, what could be is never known. So there's no happy ending to the story, and the story is untold. And people don't know what to say. I think this is one of the most difficult things, is that often people cross the street, don't know what to say, 2 months later, feel awkward when the bereaved person brings it up. So I think that's one of the things. The generational aspect of grief. You know, as my oldest brother died, it's a good example of the humor in our family, which can sometimes be a bit gallows, where he said to his next youngest brother, oh, they're picking from our pen now. And there is that thing of, you know, now we're the grown-ups, you know, and then now we're the grandparents. And in a culture that doesn't value experience and wisdom, this is very painful. I can certainly attest to that, where you're in a group of mixed ages and it's kind of like you're invisible. And that's painful. Anger, that the most practical part of it is, if somebody hasn't arranged their affairs in order and leaves a terrible, complicated mess behind, can I appeal to people? And I'm including myself in this. And I will do it. I'll report to Katrina to make a will. I do have one, but it's very, very long.
Even just to put your wishes down, doesn't have to be the will or whatever suits you as an individual. I think writing down your wishes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's important.
Yeah. And especially with big families. So very, very important. The helplessness around dying is the helplessness of watching people in pain, bearing witness to our own fears, bearing witness to their fears. Talking, one person that I recently witnessed the process of dying was an atheist, a lapsed atheist or a confirmed atheist. And I found it very difficult to say, oh, you'll be with your sister soon, that or you'll, you know, meet your mother or your ancestors. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know whether this is energy wise or, you know, not that there's a big God up there with an angel in chairs, but some continuity. Or if somebody is absolutely certain that this isn't in their understanding of their dying process. I found that very difficult,
which I wouldn't have thought of in advance.
I did actually say, when you get up there and Peter is at the pearly gates, I'd love to see your face. And that did crack a smile. And, you know, there's another part of dying and grieving, which there are these wry humorous moments that can happen. And if people don't know that that's common, they feel guilty about it. Oh, I shouldn't be laughing, you know. But everything about life there's a wryness to it. You know, like my brother, maybe that's just our family, I don't know, but there's an inevitability, a normality, a usualness that maybe people are uncomfortable with, you know. So that's the reason for saying that. I'm trying to say things that I think people might find relevant to their experiences. Mm. Like, this doesn't come from books, this comes from life experience. The helplessness of watching pain, you know, despite all of the efforts of the medical profession. Pain is a normal part of everything in life, you know, all of the processes that we go through, and that includes pain. And some kinds of pain are more amenable to pain relief, which I'm all in favor of, than others. But there are kinds of pain that are less amenable, and that needs to be borne witness to, right? Because it informs our appreciation of life after being with somebody who is dying, you know, and being witness to dying enhances our awareness of our own gratitude for life and breath. But I don't think that's ever really expressed.
No, it's definitely not expressed, I think.
Yeah, yeah. The other aspect of dying and death is where people take their own lives through suicide. I don't have experience of this in my own personal, you know, close family or friends. But that doesn't mean I don't have anything to say to somebody where this is something that they are having to bear. Because repeatedly over the years, when this has happened to patients or, you know, people that aren't immediate family and friends, they say that one of the most difficult things is silence, and then people won't speak about it. So I'm speaking about it just to speak about it, to say that it's not forgotten,
yeah,
that it is part of our communities, it's part of our families, and yeah, to bear witness to the grief of the survivors, right, in the families. We don't really have a normal for dying, you know. Also, the culture of dying and death or around is also in a process of change, in particularly in industrialized societies. Ireland is in a tsunami, you know, a volcano of changing cultural experience, one of which is, I think, more rapidly than many places, is we're experiencing rapid multicultural diversity within our population, and we don't know the customs of many of these cultures. So we don't know how to be around people. So there's a learning curve. Our own culture has changed dramatically, you know, from mainly wakes in the home, you know, which you had for your mum and how important it was. Do you want to mention how important it was for you?
Yeah, it was very important for us as a family to do this, especially with coming from the religious aspect of it, but also comforting as well, that I felt it was really important to bring Mammy home for one night to be with us ourselves. And my brother also agreed, and we, you know, subconsciously I had a lot of things planned in terms of what Mammy was going to wear and how I wanted her to be laid out and everything. And in Donegal especially, I know things, traditions are still very different up there than maybe down closer to a, you know, an urban area like Galway. Do you know, it's funeral homes are obviously taken in there more so now, and things are slightly different. But it was important to us to do that, even if it was just, we only did it for one night.
Yeah.
Because 2 days is quite a long time to do awake of people, and a lot of people were just coming, and it was lovely. It was nice that, you know, I got to hear some lovely stories about her and about her life, different people that worked with her, different people that knew her, different people that came and played bingo. My mother was a big bingo fan. Even people that came to do the bingo, you know, people that came and talked about the crack that she had on the bingo bus. So we'll end it there today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Katrina.
Take care. Bye for now. We look forward to you joining us on this journey of exploration and learning with the herbal doctor, Dr. Dailish Clare. And we'll be back with you very soon. So thank you very much, and stay tuned.